Good morning. Wow, what a great crowd we have. Really appreciate your attendance, and I want to join with Derwin in welcoming everyone that we have here today. We are especially appreciate our visitors that we have and friends and family, and we're glad you're here. This morning, I want to talk about Acts chapter 27. And this is something I've been wanting to do for a while. I fully understand that this is well-trodden ground, as they say. It's something that even us as a group have studied recently. And there was a time that I was going to cover this chapter when we were talking about Acts, and it was all my fault, and I didn't get a chance to do that. But I love this story. I like sailing. I like everything about it, the technical aspect of it. I like everything about the ocean and being on the water. I've from very early on, I taught myself to sail, and I bought a boat really early. I love sailing. And this story is packed full of amazing details when it comes to this area. In fact, this story, when secular historians they look at it, is extremely valuable. There's no other piece of literature or historical document in all of the ancient world that gives us a glimpse of the sailing techniques and what was going on at the time. Luke, it's amazing what the story that he tells here and the details that he goes into. And I hope to bring some of that to the surface. A lot of times that doesn't get discussed, and I think there's a good application for us here. So, and not only that, it's a great travel story. You can imagine Luke and Paul the rest of their lives, any time that there was a spare moment in a conversation or someone they knew, they would want to tell this story. And it's a great story. I've got a really great travel story recently that happened to me. Not of anything tragic, but it's actually a good story. And well, if I wanted to take 20 minutes to set up my lesson, as is the manner of some, I would tell it. But I'm not going to. I got to get on with it. There's a lot of expectations of how long I'm going to take in this lesson, and it's already 35 after. So I got to move. But this story, if you can imagine what Paul is about to go through in his life, and we don't know why they had to endure this event like they did. God could have easily calmed the seas. We've seen him do that before. So why go through this event? But if we think about what Paul was about to have to go through in the near future, where he was eventually going to be thrown into a damp, cold dungeon and stand before the ruler of the world at this time and make this great defense, knowing what was going to happen, wouldn't it be great to have experienced this and to see and experience in reality that wonderful lesson that Elijah told to us last week? But God, no matter what else is going on, but God is going to make it right. And he had this event, this event that he could rely on, and in addition to his faith, that he came through this knowing that God was there and going to make it right. Sound good? Okay. Before we get started, there's a couple of details that we need to bring out before we get into this. So, this isn't a luxury cruise, right? This isn't a yacht. This is the typical Roman ship at the time, maybe anywhere from 120 to 200 plus feet. There's no going below. There's no cabins. There's no staterooms. The little building that you see up there, that wasn't the head or the bathroom, as we call it on land. That wasn't what that was. That was where the captain or the owner of the ship got to stay. Everyone was huddled on deck. And keep that in mind. This deck was full of people out in this storm that they were about to go through. right? And you can primarily see that this is also a crude sailing ship, right? One thing that we need to look at before we get started is, I know this is a technical drawing, but the today's ships, today's boats, they can go almost up into the wind. They can get almost up to 30 degrees with the wind coming straight at them, based on the shape of the sail and the shape of the hull. You can go anywhere, and you can survive pretty much anything. That's not the boat that they were on. They primarily were pushed by the wind, and they were dependent. If the wind was going that direction, they were going some variation of that direction. And that's important for us to know, because it's going to help us to understand where the wind was coming from as they made their trip and what they were having difficulty with, right? So it was primarily pushed. Like if you go back, you can see that even in this drawing, the wind is pushing them. And they might be able to, in some circumstances, go across it or perpendicular to it with a lot of effort, but it was primarily pushing them. And if that was into shore, then that was a scary situation. Or if it was in a direction that they wanted to go, then you didn't go out. You had to wait until the wind was favorable. And that's going to be a really important point for us to see of why certain decisions were made at certain points, right? Okay, so and as Tim read for us, he's setting up this story. You remember Paul has been in prison or in captivity for about 2 years, and he's been making his cases and his defense to different governors and to the counselors, and there's been people that have come after his life, and he sees that this is going nowhere. And at one point he says, I appeal to Caesar, and that governor says, then to Caesar you shall go. And then we see later on another governor comes in, and we see that. But he has appealed to Caesar. He was told early on that that's what he was going to do, is to stand before him. And Paul recognized that this was the event to get him there. So let's start in verse 4, and we're going to read a lot. And putting out to sea from there, we sailed under the lee of Cyprus, because the winds were against us. And when we had sailed across the open sea of the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra and Lycia. There a centurion found a ship of Alexandria. Note, Alexandria, the big city in Egypt, that was the big port for grain going out, sailing for Italy, and put us on board. We sailed slowly for a number of days and arrived with difficulty after Cnidus. And as the wind did not allow us to go farther, we sailed under the lee of Crete off of Salonae. Coasting it along with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens, which was the city of Lycia. Okay. So notice already the story, the type of words that Luke is putting in here and is starting out. Winds against us, slowly, difficulty, did not allow, difficulty. We're going to see that theme come up quite a bit already starting out. So you see we're starting at Caesarea, and we spend a little bit of time at Sidon. And notice, you look at this and say, well, why not just go straight across? I mean, that's easy. You get a south wind blowing, you come across the wind, and you come up. That's the way to go. But remember, he says, we were hiding behind the lee of Cyprus, meaning the winds were coming from the west, and they needed to be able to have some protection there to be able to make that. And it says coasting along. That coasting means we sail close to the coast and hoping to get a little bit different wind dynamic as opposed to just hitting straight westerly winds. And so now they're trying to get to Italy, and you would think that, no reason I need to make that diversion. I'll just go straight across. But again, you had these westerlies that were fighting them, and so they tried to go across the wind and then take shelter behind the island of Crete, and they come to this place called Fair Havens, which we'll take a look at that in a moment. So verse 9 says, so much time had passed, and the voyage was now dangerous because even the fast was already over. The fast is the Day of Atonement, which would be late September, early October, which was very similar to what we're experiencing out here. As we know, when you have a November day like this, where it's warm and humid, what's likely to happen? There's going to be a cold front come in, and we're going to have some storms that we're worried about, right? And that's what's going to happen this week. Very similar was here is that you've got this mix of air masses during this time of year that can cause disastrous storms. So Paul advised them, saying, "Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with injury and much loss, not only the cargo or the ship, but also for our lives." So right off the bat, everybody wants to throw Paul off the boat, right? We don't need negative Nancy on the ship, right? That's not what everybody wants. But it says the centurion paid more attention to the pilot and the owner of the ship than what Paul says. Now, that's going to change quickly. And again, look at the words that Luke uses here of setting his story up. Dangerous, with injury, much loss. Even our own lives are in jeopardy here. Verse 12 says, "And because the harbor was not suitable to spend the winter in." Okay. The name of the harbor is Fair Havens. Right? Fair Havens is Greek for harbors. Get that. That's not a harbor. That's a beach. I mean, this looks like, it's just an open beach. There's no shelter there. Maybe the governor had their press secretary, put a positive spin on this, right? It's some fake news. But this is a terrible place to harbor the winter. There was no protection, and they knew this. They knew that they couldn't stay there. Not only that, there's no community there that's of any size. Let's say you've got 200 people on a ship and you're going to spend a few months. Where are they going to sleep? What are they going to eat? Right? The hope would be is that I've got a community that I can go to and say, "I'm a tent maker. You're making tents. Can I stay with you and you shelter me and provide me food and I'll work for that." This centurion is going to hire these people out, especially the prisoners. There's nothing here for them to eat and sustain themselves. This is not a good place to winter. So they've got to move on. And it says, interestingly, there's some dynamic and discussion going on because it says the majority decided to put out to sea from there on the chance that somehow they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete facing both southwest and northwest. And it's not how we would word it today, but it's really protection from southwest and northwest storms that would be coming there, and they were going to spend the winter there. So again, this is where they were, and this is where they're going, right? This is really good. You've got a really good shelter protection from anything coming from the northwest, also from the southwest, which were where the predominant storms would come from. If I needed to, I could even take the ship onto the other side and protection there. And you can't see it, but there's all types of ruins. This used to be a large community here. So I've got some place that I can put 276 people and shelter them for a few months. So this is where we want to go. It's only 20 miles away. Right? It's just around the corner from Fair Havens. Only 20 miles. All I need is a gentle breeze from the south, and I'll be there in, by lunch. That's it. 20 miles to go. An easy sail. Following seas, it'll be wonderful. Now, amazingly, when the south wind blew gently, supposedly they had obtained their purpose. They're thinking, "We've got it. This is what we need." They pulled anchor and sailed along Crete close to shore. Now remember, the wind's coming from the south. It's hard for them to go perpendicular to the wind based on the type of ship. Oops. So, they're fighting a little bit to get around the corner, and then they're home free. So they pull anchor. And they start to sail, but it says, "But soon a tempestuous wind. And that word, when you look in the Greek, is actually where we get the word typhoon. And that word typhoon in the Greek was a Greek god who was like this demon god that fought Zeus and caused all types of problems on the sea. And so what Luke is saying is that this demon possessed wind, this terrible storm that blows up. And you may have a different word in depending what translation you are, but it roughly translates a nor'easter. And we have nor'easters on our east coast as well, and it's when this really terrible mix of air masses comes together and creates an extremely large storm, equivalent of a hurricane. And it says, when the ship was caught, it could not face the wind. So what they're trying to do is that as soon as they take off and they realize, oh, this was a bad idea, they're going to try to go back. They're going to try to at least get close enough that they can drop anchor and wait out this storm. But it says we couldn't even turn the ship around. One of the reasons that you don't want to try to turn the ship around in big seas is because you've got a chance of rolling. It says we gave way to it and were driven along. They couldn't do anything to stop the direction that their boat was heading. And running under a lee of a small island, and again, the lee, windward versus lee, so they were going to get some protection from a small island so that they could pull their skiff on board, the small tender boat that they towed behind. And notice, I think this is interesting too, is Luke uses the we. It seems to be that Luke was sharing in trying to pull this other boat onto the deck of the ship's boat. Okay, so this is the whole island of Crete, and this is where they were leaving from. And so remember, they were being driven down, and they were looking for protection here just long enough that they could get the skiff on board. Now, you may not be able to tell from the picture, but you see, we've got mountain range, and we've got mountain range. This is like a big funnel. It's a really low land. Like maybe during Noah's flood, this is when something washed over this island and just scoured it down to almost sea level. And so that storm funneled those winds straight down onto the harbor of Fair Havens. And it's even known for that today, is that this is a terrible place to be when storms are going to come out of the north, because they funnel down between these two mountain ranges. So that storm was magnified in its impact on that boat. Okay. We get the small dinghy, the small boat up on deck. They're using supports to gird the ship together, to try to hold it together from breaking up. And then, fearing that they would run aground on the Syrtis, they lowered gear and they were thus driven along. So this Syrtis, this area is, it's a real dangerous set of sandbars off the coast of Libya. So what's happened over the thousands of years, as sand has been blown off of the desert, it dumps right out into the ocean and makes these sandbars that extend 50 to 100 miles offshore, just south of Crete. You may think, well, sand is soft, that's not bad, but if you run aground 100 miles offshore, you're dead. There's no way that you are not going to survive. There's no way you're going to swim to shore. You're going to run out of water. You're done. And you may, and this was an infamous area of the ocean, of the Mediterranean at the time. You remember Jason and the Golden Fleece, that story that you learned in school, and the Argonauts and everything. Part of the story was him running aground on these sandbars. It was a very well-known thing that they absolutely tried to avoid this whole area of the Mediterranean because of that reason. You may see that it says they lowered the gear. You may have in yours, they lowered the sail. That's not what they did. They had already done that. We know that this word here for gear now is a sea anchor. And what a sea anchor is a huge parachute that you throw off the back of the boat, and it extends way out. So these storms were creating waves that may, if this is 20 feet high, this storm potentially had waves that were 30 feet plus. Right? So imagine being on the deck of a boat. The deck of the boat may be 8, 10 feet out of the water, and what you're seeing on both sides of you is walls of water. And the danger comes if I surf my boat down a wave, I pick up so much speed that I crash into the bottom of the next one and I capsize my boat. Or I'm going so fast that the rudders have no power to control the boat and it turns sideways and it rolls. This sea anchor was designed to hold you in between the waves so that a wave wouldn't crash over and it wouldn't drive you along where you surf down it. That is absolutely what you didn't want to do. And so basically, they're throwing this out and they're saying, I hope this isn't driving us towards these sandbars because we have no way of controlling it. So we're going to slow it down and let it take us, but we're at least going to try to have some kind of control over this. Make sense? Okay. Since we were violently storm-tossed, they began the next day to jettison cargo. Right? Has anybody ever wondered, you see these huge cargo ships, right? And you see cruise ships, and anybody ever wondered, why don't they fall over? Right? I mean, it doesn't look like it should be standing up straight. And especially if you put a sail on it, it falls over. And the reason is because they have ballast in them. There's weight down in the bottom of them. The modern ships pump in water to hold them upright. Sailboats use lead in the bottom of them. The Romans were so smart about this and so efficient with everything, they said, we're not going to put ballast, we're not going to put lead or stones in there. We're going to use the cargo that we carry to be the ballast of the ship. And the fact here is that they're willing to jettison this out means that they are in a difficult situation. What they're trying to do is they're trying to give some flotation because they're taking on water. And they're getting rid of things that to offset that extra ballast that they're getting and sitting down in the water. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. I think the reason that Luke puts here with their own hands is that nobody would throw your ship's tackle overboard. This is, if you have any hope of surviving this situation, the last thing that you would do is throw over your mast and your sail and your lines and your blocks and your tackle. You need that stuff once you get through the storm. They took it and threw it overboard. When neither the sun nor the stars appeared for many days, they had no idea where they were. Navigation was really crude at the time, but at least you could get an idea of where you were going and where you were what direction you were being pushed and where you stood. No, they were not worried about being blown off the edge of the earth. Let's take just a minute here. Nobody believed the earth was flat. We've got to stop that. That is just not, nobody believed the earth was flat. That's just the story that got started. Everybody knew the earth was around. In fact, 400 years before this story was told, a Greek mathematician calculated within a few hundred miles the circumference of the earth. They knew it was around. What they're worried about is that they have no idea what they're being blown into, and there's quite a bit of danger there, right? So they haven't seen the sun or stars. They have no means of navigation. They didn't have compasses at the time. And no small tempest lay on us. Again, the storm is still blowing as it was. And this statement is absolutely amazing. All hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. All hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. They thought they were going to die. Right? These men that were sailing this boat, these were experienced sailors. These were hardened men that had spent their life on the ocean. Even Paul was an experienced sailor, had a lot of time. They thought they were going to die. All hope of our being saved was... That's the type of storm that we were on. Paul sees it as a great opportunity. Oops. Oh, I hope I did. All right. So he's going to stand up. He says, since they had been without food for a long time, Paul stood up and said, men, you should have listened to me and not have set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss. Now, I know we often, and I've heard it said many times that Paul is being, I told you so here. I've even heard someone say that he's not being very Christ-like. I completely disagree. I can imagine Paul standing up and pleading with the people on this ship that says, I predicted this was going to happen, and it has happened. So listen to me now. Yet now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told. But we must run aground on an island. But wait a second, Paul. What was the last part that you said? But we must run aground on some island. We'll look at that in a minute. But he gets up and provides. Again, I don't think he's being an I told you so or rubbing their noses in it and whatsoever. He's trying to get them to take heart. He's trying to get them to believe and to have the faith that he does that says, God is going to get us through this, and he's told me so. He's promised me that all of you are going to live. That would have been a great message to hear at this time. After they had gotten to the point of desperation of throwing everything overboard, knowing that it's a last-ditch effort to try to be saved. Okay, so now what we've seen is that they have been moving in a random pattern, as some like to show, that across the Adriatic here, and they're approaching this island of Malta that they're going to land on. It says, when the 14th night had come. They had been doing this for 2 weeks. 2 weeks. 2 weeks have they been on the deck of this ship, having waves washed over them, not knowing what was going to happen. A couple years ago, I went out on a 100-plus foot ship out in the Gulf of Mexico, about 250 miles, where we were doing some diving around oil rigs, and we were in 12 to 15 foot seas. There were 20 people in that boat. When we left and we got out there, there were 10 people that I did not see for the whole time. They never left their bunks. You got to imagine the scene here, right? Most of these people that were just passengers, whether prisoners or otherwise, they were not used to this kind of seas, right? They're the kinds that would have gotten sick just in a normal day of sailing. And here we have people on this deck, wet, cold, sick. They haven't eaten for 2 weeks. 2 weeks. About midnight, the sailors suspected they were nearing land. This is an experienced group of men that can just, by the sound of the seas and the changing of the waves, know that they're getting close to land. It was dark. They couldn't see anything. They were waiting for daylight to be able to see what was going on. They take a sounding, basically a lead weight that they're dropping down to the ocean to see how deep it is. It's 20 fathoms, probably about 120 feet. They do it again. It's getting shallower, which means they're being driven into land. And fearing that they might run on rocks, they let down four anchors from the stern, that's the rear of the ship, and prayed for day to come. If there's any place that you want to see how fragile your body is, jump in the ocean next to some rocks, right? That is the last thing that you want, is to run aground. No one's going to survive that. You're going to be in seas this big, you're going to be smashed and torn apart in these rocks. And they were right to fear that. And so they're letting down these anchors to see what they're dealing with. As day was about to dawn, Paul urged them to take some food, saying, "Today is the 14th day that you've continued in suspense and without food, having taken nothing." That boat that I was on, people didn't eat for 3 days. It seemed like they were having trouble walking off of that boat at the end of the 3 days. They were so weak. 14 days. He's saying, you're going to need your strength. "Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it will give you strength. For not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you." Again, I'm telling you, you need to listen to me. We're all going to survive this. "And when they had said these things, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. Then they all were encouraged and ate some food themselves." We were all 276 persons in that ship. You need to know that there are some older transcripts that say 76, not 276. 276 would have been a lot. It would have been packed. We've maybe have 100 plus in the room today. That ship would have been maybe just a little bit more than the floor space we have here. Can you imagine? That's the right number. Either way, there's a lot of people here. You would think in a seriousness of this, Luke is trying to make us the point is that there should be some casualties. At least a couple. Not everybody can swim. It's rough. There should be some casualties. It's an important point because, again, what Paul's saying is absolutely going to be true. Because all of them are going to survive. "And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing the wheat into the sea." So, you got to ask yourself, well, you know, why would they even start this trip in the first place? Why were they so eager to get going this time of the year? Why would they risk it? Well, remember Acts 11, Paul mentions a famine. And we know that there were more famines also during this time. And the emperor had said that, okay, anybody that's going to take a risk to travel in the wintertime, there's a bonus, a healthy bonus, as if one trip, you're set for life kind of bonus, right? The last thing you want is a city the size of Rome that's hungry, right? The whole story of the bread and circuses, right? You had to bring a lot of food into the city, and they were willing to pay handsomely for it. And not only that, they were promised basically an insurance payment. If the ship crashes, we're going to pay you for it. So the owner of the ship and those that were with, they were thinking, which is what a lot of people has motivated to get out into the ocean is for profit, right? That's why Columbus went out. Not to prove the earth was round. It was for money. Marco Polo, it was all these men, it was for money. These men set out for money because it was very lucrative. But they're throwing it into the sea. Now remember, they were already lightening some out. They hadn't completely thrown this out, not because they were trying to protect the wheat, but because, again, that was the ballast. That was what was holding the ship upright and keeping it somewhat level in the water. But now what the focus is I need to run this boat as far up, as close to shore as possible, so that we all have the best opportunity to get onto shore. Now, when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach. A beach is much better than rocks. On which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. Again, they want to get up as close as you absolutely can, and then hopefully jump out. So they cast off the anchors and let them into the sea. At the same time, loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. So now they can steer. They hoisted the foresail. And remember this, they had already thrown off the big tall mast and all that rigging, all the mainsail. They've thrown that out. And the last thing you want is 276 people on deck and that stuff breaking off and causing injury and everything else. So they had thrown that stuff over. They'd given up hope on ever needing that again. But they still had their foresail. And that foresail is what they're hoping is going to push them as close to the beach as they can. And now they have the use of their rudders, and they're going to steer up there. And this is another good picture of the cross-section. See, it's packed down below. No one's down below. They're up there on deck, suffering in the storm. And down below is the worst place to be anyway. Okay, so hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. But striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. A boat this size being broken up by waves, the waves must have been huge. To break, and on that boat, the violence of being on that deck, it must have been remarkable of what they were going through when they experienced this. Okay, so this is St. Paul's Bay. This is where most believe that they came to rest, and you can't really see it good, but you notice. So this is east. This is directly east. They're coming in, there's a reef. And you can go into the Maritime Museum on Malta, and lo and behold, somebody just out here uncovered six Roman anchors. And you say, well, they had four and they cut them off. But remember, there were some that were trying to sneak, I didn't read it, but there were some that were trying to sneak off the boat because they knew what it meant for this group of people. The best chance we're going to have is to take this smaller skiff in by ourselves, and we've got a chance of getting up close to shore and surviving, and we can paddle, and we can do. They cut those off, and there were anchors on that boat. Remember, they were doing it under the pretense of laying out anchors to the bow. There were two small anchors, four big anchors. Those anchors are in a museum on this island. But you can clearly see we have a nice beach. But not knowing where they were coming from, they hit that shallow sandbar and rocky reef offshore. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and to make for land, and the rest on planks or pieces of ship. And so it was that they all were brought safely to land. Just as Paul said they was. Just as God promised. They all survived it. Again, not a storm that you would normally survive. So, I hope everybody got something out of the story there. Again, I like talking about it. I know it's something that we've discussed in details, and I know there's lots of points that we could bring out to apply to us spiritually in that. And we've done those. The only one that I would look at for us to close is you remember when they were throwing stuff overboard, right? They had given up all hope. There was nothing on that ship that was worth their lives. They gladly threw it overboard. They gladly abandoned everything and anything that they had on that ship that they thought might be a hindrance to their survival. Now, if we could only have that same recognition when it comes to our spiritual lives. If we could only see those things that are in our lives that potentially could keep us out of salvation and be so readily ready to throw them to the bottom of the ocean and to cast them overboard. Right? If we could only see that our salvation is so much more valuable than anything that we're trying to keep in that ship and we're trying to hold on to, that we gladly throw it to the bottom of the ocean. We cast it overboard. And we don't let it interfere with the hope that we've been given through Christ Jesus. If there's anyone here today that we can help? We can help throw overboard whatever it is in your life that's keeping you from salvation? We would love to do that. We would love to do that. Let us know as we stand and Elijah leads us through this song.